This is Neil Burns from Draw the Line. You're listening to Monday Night Talk on WATD. I'm back in the saddle again, baby.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk, and we want to thank the good Senator Bob Edlund for joining us, giving us a little bit of a tune-up. Seeing that we're one of the last FM talk stations at this hour.
Forget FM, just talk in general.
Let's stay on the band we're on. FM band.
Okay.
But we want to thank him for joining us. We want to thank Rachel Caprillion for joining us as well. And we move on to our next topic of business. Joining us is Mr. Vince Cogliano. He's one of the leading Republicans in Plymouth County. You're part of the Plymouth County.
Plymouth County GOP. I'm the chair, right?
I thought I said it. I was just kind of putting it in a little fancier term.
That's great.
And joining us on the phone line, nobody says it's over better than our person is going to join us now, especially when we're talking election night. He is our senior political analyst, Mr. John Creed, on the line.
How are you doing, buddy?
Pretty good, sir. Yourself?
Well, we're here.
And as you know, we have Vince Cogliano and Joe Rossi. We're all kind of sitting here trying to figure out what's going on with our government these days.
Well, I think if you solve that, you'll be the head of the class for the whole world.
Maybe but Nobel Prize?
Then some. I mean, here's a group that met for 2 days and now is off for about 3 weeks. I mean, that's quite a life.
What's the term fiscal cliff? I mean, if they didn't get a deal done, guys, I mean, what was the worst that would happen? Were there a bunch of different tax breaks that would basically?
No, I think the biggest problem would be the stock market's reaction, as you know, because they signed it. They gained 300 points. If they didn't do it, they might have lost 300 or 500 points, and it was more psychological to the market than really what effect it had at this moment on an individual citizen.
That's not exactly true. Tax increases of about $5.7 trillion would have hit the economy. That would have had a little bit more of an effect than 300 to 500 points on the stock market.
Well,
it would have hit
every
taxpayer.
One day.
Oh.
I mean, basically, the tax increase went into effect at midnight. Okay, so they theoretically they voted to reduce taxes, not raise taxes.
No, but I think the point he was making is, what if it never happened at all? Mm. What if they never reached a deal?
But you knew they were going to. So that's a hypothetical that wasn't going to happen. I mean, there's no question about that.
But that's the reason it didn't happen.
How you solve the problem down the road. For example, one of the things that's going to come up is to increase the debt. Now, I personally, under the circumstances, would vote yes. But I think you as a Republican should ask this legitimate question of people like Mr. Miller. Because when President Bush II was President of the United States, Obama didn't vote to extend the debt. Mm. Now, why does he think it's so important now and didn't do it when he was a member of the United States Senate? That's a legitimate question.
Well, that's something that at the back end of our conversation, that's something we got coming up next month is basically, are we going to push our debt ceiling up next month? Are we going to extend it yet again? Or is there going to be some kind of an action.
Well, I think it'd be good. This is a chance for the Republicans to draw the line and get significant spending cuts. For example, I can tell you how I would do it, if you want to know my opinion, okay? And I'll tell you how I do it. First of all, I'd go after loopholes. Second of all, I would go after defense. Thirdly, I would get rid of some of the cabinet positions like the Department of the Environment and the Department of Education. I mean, I've been on school boards since 1973. Education is a local matter. It doesn't belong to the federal government, and it doesn't belong to the state government because they mandate too many things and don't pay for anything. So there's a savings right off the bat. partly Republican, if you will, and partly Democrat.
Joe?
You know, I think there's an, I think, you know, this, it's a great discussion to have here about, you know, what's going to happen within the next couple of months, but I think there's a greater problem here that needs to be addressed.
What's
and
that?
That is whatever decision that's made, you know, does Congress understand what effect it is really going to have on the average, you know, they keep saying that, you know, we talked with Bob about what the middle class, you know, what is middle class and
what is it, yeah.
And what it is. But I don't think they understand what any class is. I think they understand that there's a 2% of the richest Americans and then the rest of the people in this country.
Well, I think that is an argument that you know, Obama kind of won the PR thing, but I would tend to agree it doesn't mean a heck of a lot. I think if you tax the top 2%, I think you could run the government for about a day and a half.
Yeah.
But I think the thing to look at, and this is where I think both parties are going to have to decide what they want to do, is in World War II, Roosevelt supported the war with a tax. That's why we've never had a declared war since. Korea wasn't a declared war. Vietnam wasn't a declared war. And neither Afghanistan or Iraq. Because once you declare a war, then you have to show how you're going to pay for it. And the way Bush 2 and Bush 1, and of course Bush 1 got helped out because Saudi Arabia picked up the tab, but until we're willing to pay for what we want, I mean, I sit on a school committee. Everybody wants X, Y, and Z, but then when you tell them you need a Proposition 2.5 override, they go under the table.
So, yeah.
I mean, people have got to decide, you know, what they want and are they willing to pay for it. Now, the problem, you know, with the Tea Party people, I mean, they don't want any form of government.
Right.
I mean, and then you got the far left that want a socialistic form of government. And the other thing you got to look at, and you people do if you watch election nights, right now there's roughly 34 to 50 to 60 House seats that are up for grabs. Everything else is pretty much gerrymandered, so they're safe Republican, a safe Democrat, with very few exceptions. And when the country is that split, now, a lot of people are criticizing, you know, Romney, and I don't think he ran a good campaign, but needless to say, 60 million people voted for him. That's a lot of people. So when Obama says he won by 51.3% of the vote.
Yeah.
So, that's not taking it to the bank. Statistically, a landslide is 55%.
Right.
Well, there are 60 million people who didn't want him, and so I think people have to consider, when you say he won, you know, what did he win? And don't forget, the Republicans control the House by about 33 seats or something like that. I think it's 233 to 200, and there's a couple of seats
sure
that are up for grabs. But so when you look at that, and the Democrats control the Senate and the presidency, that's what the American people voted. The American people want divided government. They don't want one team to run the show.
Sure.
But I think, you know, getting back, Kevin, a little bit to what, you know, the discussion that we're going to have as a nation in regards to, you know, our debt ceiling, our debt limit, and
well,
also
I,
to...
Well, first and foremost, I mean, anybody who gets a paycheck,
yes,
I'm sure they saw the hit this last... This
2%.
Last,
yeah, you know, time out. That was based on a holiday for Social Security. They've been raiding the Social Security account. They shouldn't have had that holiday, number one,
right,
because that 2% goes back into the Social Security Trust Fund. So what they took out last week, in the good Lord willing, you're going to get back later. Don't forget, the average person in a lifetime puts a little over $300,000 into the Social Security account, and when they retire, they bring in well over $400,000.
Sure.
So I don't think the 2% should be an argument, because it's a holiday that Obama and the Congress gave that, in my view, they shouldn't have given, because they raided the Social Security account.
Well, here's my question is don't we still have a problem? Isn't Social Security, the system as it is, broken?
No.
It isn't?
No. No, that's a misnomer. I think the earliest, if they kept everything the same and didn't do what they did the other day, the system is solid till 2036.
Okay.
Now they're bringing some money back into the fund.
What happens in 2030?
John, that's something that people should consider. Nancy, hang it, Nancy.
I think it's 29.
Is it 29?
I'm sorry, I had to do something for the home.
No, that's okay, John. Question for you: what happens in 2036? What happens to Social Security?
That is, if they didn't do anything and didn't bring in another dime, it would go default.
Okay.
But that's not going to happen. And by the way, go back to the 1980s when you had Reagan as president and Tip O'Neill and Bob Dole. The Social Security is supposed to die in 1990. Well, they're not going to let that happen.
Right, right.
So that's politically a stupid argument.
Well, because my question is, I mean, we saw during Bush's term, I mean, there was talk from time to time that he had talked about privatizing it, or that there were discussions that would percolate.
That was
time.
Bush too.
Bush,
and I mean, that would be stupid. I mean, anybody who privatized Social Security, they'd have to be out of their mind. But don't forget, it was an option.
Right.
You could privatize, or you could do it traditionally. I would urge people to keep doing Social Security like they've done it since 1936.
So kind of dialing it back to the whole fiscal cliff thing. Will we not, you know, the middle class or anybody who is below a certain benchmark when it comes to earning on an annual basis, not see this? And who is it exactly affecting?
Well, I mean, it really, you know, those over 400,000, obviously their taxes are going from 36 to 39. But remember, their taxes were at 60% in the Clinton days. So That's a wash. Yeah, the thing you watch, and I don't know all the particular details, is the deductions you can no longer take. That is probably a bigger hit on people than the 3% increase in the taxes for those over 400,000.
Is that going to be for people who file for this year or for next tax year?
Well, I don't think they can do it because it didn't go into effect till 2013,
right,
so
okay.
Would not affect the 2012 tax.
Right, so that's why we've seen a lot of people rushing to get things done by the end of December.
A lot of people do that. That's why you're going to see, Kevin, and you've already seen, the revenue for December in Massachusetts
jumped.
Was way up, but that's because a lot of people took advantage, not knowing, and took advantage of their capital investment and did it in December while, you know, not waiting until like February. So in January and February, those accounts are probably going to go down, at best level off.
Yeah, I, for the rest of this year, there's no reason to believe the economy is going to get appreciably better. It might hit growth of 2% if we're lucky, but it's been historically 3% since the end of World War II. And 2% just barely replaces the people in the workforce. So
and that's the thing. You know, they talk about, I think last month they claim 155,000 new jobs.
That was the number.
But I think we need like a quarter of a million to make the thing work, 300,000. But here's another thing, and maybe somebody knows the answer because I don't. Take Johnny Jones or Susie Q that might get a part-time job, say, as a custodian for a school part-time. But they also work at, you know, say, Costco or some other place. Does that count as two jobs or one job? And that's why some of these numbers that you see grow is maybe some people have, you know, working two jobs to try to get in 40 hours. Mm. But does that count? You know,
I think they're only counting 30-hour jobs.
And I don't know the answer, by the way.
Mm. Yeah, I think they're only counting 30-hour jobs. I could be wrong, but I think that's
the threshold.
You might
be right, but that's a misnomer. But here's something, you know, when you look at Obamacare, okay, and health costs is one of the biggest factors in this whole show.
Yep.
But here is something to consider, Kevin, and you ought to bring in people on both sides in a future show.
Sure.
But Obamacare goes into effect, affecting Catholic hospitals in August of 2013.
Yep.
Okay? The Vatican, in my opinion, will not allow abortions in Catholic hospitals. And one thing that people don't realize, the Catholic Church owns 16% of the hospitals in the country. Do you imagine if they closed them, what effect that would have? Mm. And that doesn't count the fundamental Protestants who own hospitals. And Obama, I think, really didn't understand what he got into. Now, Massachusetts, it doesn't affect because most of these Catholic hospitals have been sold to private entities, even though they have the Catholic names. But as part of their arrangement, they're not supposed to do anything that the Catholic Church is against. But that will probably happen. But look at the rest of the country, and that's something nobody's looked upon, that the Catholic Church owns 16% of the hospitals in the country.
Well, I think this goes to another point that I was making earlier is you're right. I don't think Obama did understand, you know, the grasp of what, you know, it really takes, or what the mindset of some of these Catholic and Christian organizations are, and what they want and what they expect and what they respect. But I think it goes to another greater point that I made earlier in the night, and that is that the legislators at Capitol Hill don't understand what's actually going on in this economy. They have absolutely no grasp of what's really going on, and that makes for the decisions that we see that
Nancy,
that
Tommy's calling
that has that, you know, the decisions that they make
back.
Really have no, they don't understand the implications.
I think they're beginning to understand them a little bit.
No,
more.
No, but I could see she called when, you.
When the Bush tax cuts took place in two steps during his administration, I think only 7 to 10 Democrats voted for them. This time around...
I'm sorry, I lost track. I was talking to my wife. What happened?
We were talking about whether or not the legislators in Washington understand what's going on, and I was saying that when the Bush tax cuts took place in two separate steps in his administration, fewer than 10 Democrats voted for them. When this latest round of, avoiding the fiscal cliff, 136 Democrats voted to make sure those tax cuts stayed in effect for everyone under that $400,000 threshold. And $250,000.
Yeah, and there was only I think 80 Republicans that voted yes, and 150-something voted no.
Yeah, but the Democrats voted for it.
So, oh, yeah, the Democrats voted for it because Obama wanted it. I mean, that's...
No, yeah, but listen to the point. The point is that I think this means, and I agree with George Will, who made this point as well, that the Democrats are now saying that the middle class tax increases are off limits. And if he's correct, and I suspect he is, to be honest with you, they won't touch the middle class. And that's where the money is. If you want the money, if you want to reduce the debt, if you want to pay it down, you have to take money from the middle class. We all know that. If that's off limits, then the debt ceiling debate is going to be very interesting in the next month, because you might see an awful lot of Democrats saying we need to not raise the debt limit because we can't afford it.
Is that a bargaining chip?
I think you're going to find out that what's really going to happen is maybe sufficient cuts in domestic spending, and that might be the first question. And then don't forget, the tax rates are one hole, the deductions are another.
Mm.
You know, I agree, and I heard George Will say that. I was watching the Stephanopoulos show there, and he was arguing with the former Secretary of Labor, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, right.
But the thing is that they get them in the loopholes, but the Republicans, believe it or not, strategically, are in better shape now than they were 3 weeks ago.
Because this tax thing is
resolved, at least that issue is gone by temporarily. Now it gets back to the debt and how do you get there? And the Democrats aren't going to increase the taxes on the middle class, and you can't tell me you're going to tax the rich anymore, because I mean, everybody misses, what, 1.5% or 2% left. I mean, those people can't solve everything. So I agree 100%. It will be interesting how they play out. And in the long run, the Democrats might have put themselves in a corner they may not know how to get out of.
Well, but they shouldn't have to worry about getting out of the corner. This is about the American people. It's about our future as a country. They should be putting that far ahead of all of the other concerns they might have about spending or anything else. This is unsustainable.
Yeah, anybody, I agree, but anybody, here's the problem. You know, and it hurt him, you know, the famous 47% statement that Romney said during the campaign. You know, so you take 47% who feel that government is there to give, then that means all the other 53% are going to have to think like you're just saying, and I'm not sure that can happen.
The Democratic legislators in Washington know what the voters are thinking now, and the voters are thinking this is about as far as we're going to go.
Mm. Yeah.
They know it.
It's interesting because Obama, his popularity, believe it or not, since the election has gone down.
Why, believe it or not?
Yeah. but he's lame duck now. He's lame duck from here on out.
He is. Right. Yeah. But I think, you know, it's interesting, as you mentioned the 47% comment, I will say that, you know, the Democrats really made that a centerpiece of a negative for Romney, while that 47% we're finding out is an actual statistic of people who are on some sort of government support.
I don't think anybody's questioned the accuracy, but, you know, the perception and the fact that Romney, you know, is considered a well-off person. I mean, those perceptions hurt him more than stating something that was a fact.
Well, I'm going to throw a wrench into this a little bit and get. I want to get everybody's kind of thoughts on another angle here. Politically speaking, we know that John Kerry has been picked to fill the role that Hillary Clinton is going to be stepping down from. Well, how do you guys feel that race is going to shape up? A, who do you think is going to be the odds-on pick for the governor to fill that seat, and who do you feel is going to jump into the race to next serve our state as senator, U.S. senator?
Who are you asking?
I'll ask you first, John.
Well, first of all, I think the Democrats are fearful of losing the seat. That's why they're clear in the field for
Markey.
I think they're trying to clear the field for Markey. Number one. Number two, I don't know. I think Brown's got the resources, whether it's in the belly and whether he thinks that all these things that were said about him, he wasn't sensitive. And then I think he made a dumb move talking about Markey living in Washington or wherever he lives, Virginia or someplace. I think he made a mistake there. Brown against Coakley ran an excellent campaign against the new senator. He ran, in my judgment, a terrible campaign, and I don't know whether he's looking forward to a race for governor rather than this Senate race. And if I were the governor for the interim position, I would pick former Representative John Oliver from the western part of the state. That's, if I was him, I would surprise everybody and pick Oliver.
Vince, what do you think?
Well, I think that, of course, we all know how much pressure Barney Frank is putting on the governor right now.
That's because he doesn't like Markey.
Right. I know. It's a personal thing. I understand that. But I'm not sure that the governor will succumb to that. I just think the governor just flat out doesn't like Barney. I think Scott is really doing some serious deliberation about whether or not to run for governor or for the Senate. But I think he'll come down on the Senate side. I think he'll beat Markey. I don't think that's much of an issue for him. But the real issue is Joe Kaye in 14. He is running for the seat in 14.
Joe Kaye 2 or 3?
3.
Okay.
Right.
Just want to make sure, because there's still a couple...
I know, but he's running for it. That's really what will help enter into the decision about governor or the Senate.
Well,
but I think he wants the Senate.
If somebody like Joe Kaye runs in 14... you got to look at the turnout in 2014 to the turnout in 2010.
Of course. Yep, that's what they're looking at right now.
2014 is going to be a better year for the Republicans than 2012 because the turnout is going to be 10 to 12% less in Massachusetts. So if Joe Kay is thinking about that, and especially only being a Congress one term, I think that might backfire on him.
I'm gonna say that Scott has got a very tough position on his hands right now, because if I was Scott Brown, I wouldn't be looking at this race. I would be looking at 2014, and if I'm looking at 2014, I would say Scott Brown does not have a very good chance. And I only say that because of what you were just saying a second
ago. For U.S. Senate or for governor?
For U.S. Senate.
Okay.
And I think that's a lot of work and a lot of resources to pour in. And I know it's a being, he'd become a U.S. Senator again, but for a year and a half, I think Scott Brown can do a lot more good being, appointed or doing some type of local work for the party in Massachusetts than going through all the work to be reelected for a very short amount of time. I think for the Democrats, it kind of surprised me when I saw Markey go out there for the seat, because as long as I've been in Massachusetts, which is a long time, he's never stood out as a prominent Democrat in the legislature for the U.S. House of Massachusetts. I would almost have picked Steve Lynch as one of the major players.
I don't see Lynch wanting to jump
into
the
Democrats. The don't like Lynch.
Well, that's the thing. Well, see, that's
Markey's retiring anyhow.
Yes,
he's only going to do the campaign to hold the seat for Joe K3. That's what it is.
Yeah, and see that's a good point you bring up about the Democrats don't like Lynch, and this is why. And I said this, and I said this 2 years ago, and I think you'll remember, Kevin, when I was talking about this on this show, that if Lynch had jumped in to the race against Brown, it would have been over before it began, because Lynch is everything Brown is in terms of being a moderate, but he's got a D next to his name. Yep. Reasons that Democrats don't like Lynch are the same reasons Republicans don't like Brown. And so that's why I'm surprised. I'm only surprised that Lynch is the type of guy who might jump into the race just because he can, regardless of whether Democrats like him or not. However, Lynch not jumping in, I guess, will clear the way for Markey. I just find it odd. Again, I find it odd that someone else isn't jumping in and it's not a race. But I guess, Vince, you're right. If he's going to be retiring, he's got nothing to lose. And he might as well jump in.
One of the things that hurt Markey, in my opinion, any Democrat for this Senate race, other than a congressman can run because his House seat is safe, but they're not known in Pittsfield, Greenfield, Holyoke. I mean, they're only known in their own congressional district.
Right.
Though Markey's got, they claim, $3 million in the bank. So I think it's an interesting point. I think people like Ed Perry and the radio and TV people hope 95 people run and they can make some more money.
Absolutely. Well, I got to ask you this one last question, Mr. Crane, and that is, who do you feel Brown would be more effective as running for governor or running for the U.S. Senate?
Running for the U.S. Senate.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. And there's actually a funny story that Brown was lobbying for the lieutenant governor's seat with Charlie Baker long before he picked who he did. That just goes to show you that he finds himself as a lieutenant governor, I think, more than a governor, which is fine. I think a lieutenant governor, is a nice position to have, but I think his role as a U.S. senator makes him
more.
But I think a role as a U.S. senator is more effective for what he, tends to do. And he was in the Mass Senate, so he does know.
No disrespect to Tim Murray, but I mean, he's already he's got issues. If he thinks of running in 2 years,
One quick thing.
Yeah.
Scott Brown is very popular nationwide, more so than he is in Massachusetts.
Yes, that's true.
Don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that he might go for this seat for the year and a half, win it, not run in 16 or 14, but go right to Iowa.
No way, Jose.
You don't think so?
I don't think so.
No way, Jose.
I think Chris Christie does, but I think, again, Brown might lobby as vice president.
Is there another bush in the pipeline?
To do it, you got to go to Iowa.
Well,
you got to do it. I agree that's a possibility.
Obama Obama is, you know, a president as a senator. I think the last person that went from the Senate to the White House was Kennedy.
John Kennedy. That's true.
That's right.
And that's 50 or 60 years ago.
The one last thing I will say is you're
and
talking about...
the one before that, I think, was Garfield.
Talking about Tim Murray running for governor, I think Tim Murray will be primaried and lose. That's all I'll say.
Well, Mr. Crean, we want to thank you so much for joining us. And
it's a pleasure, and I enjoy it. Hopefully we all exchange, and I tried to be part Republican and part Democrat.
And I want to thank you, Mr. Cogliano, for shooting over here.
Thanks for having me.
And we're going to step aside for a few moments. When we come back, we'll speak with Dave Wedge, the Boston Herald. Stay tuned.